Good afternoon. I'd like to welcome you to the House Committee on Veterans and Emergency Preparedness. Today is March 5th, and we have a couple bills up. I appreciate those being here to testify in support or possible opposition. You just never know. But again, thank you very much. And with that, we will get rolling right along and open up a public hearing on House Bill 2044. Ms. Edwards.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2044 authorizes the Oregon Department of Veteran Affairs to establish via rule reasonable compensation for ordinary and unusual services rendered by the ODVA as conservators and personal representatives. It removes the ceiling on the ODVA's compensation of 5% of income to a veteran's estate, and it declares emergency and would be effective upon passage. There is a no revenue impact statement issued and a fiscal statement issued for this bill.
Thank you very much, and I see already before us is Mr. Tom Mann, and Tom, you brought along some technical support today, didn't you?
Yes, sir.
So please feel free, state for the record your name, of course, and if you'll both identify yourself prior to testimony, appreciate it, and feel
sure.
free.
My name is Tom Mann. I'm with the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs, and with me today is Kelly Brashears, who is our conservatorship manager. I have a couple of conservatorship bills in front of you. You should have our testimony. Let me explain what conservatorship is before we get started. When a veteran has been deemed incompetent to handle their own affairs by either a court or the federal VA, a conservator is put in place to manage that person's assets. And so we have a conservatorship program, and there are private conservators, people that do this for a living. Not to be confused with guardians. Guardians are people that are put in place to manage the health care and the day-to-day living of somebody who needs a guardian, but the guardians and the conservators work very closely together to make sure that a person who's not able to take care of themselves, then they're the most vulnerable people, that they are protected not only from people that would take advantage of them, because there are those folks, but sometimes from themselves. We've had veterans who have had issues with conservatorship. They come off conservatorship and they'll spend $120,000 in 2 days because they're not able to manage their own funds and somebody will take advantage of them and those type of things. So we've had a conservatorship program at ODVA since 1965, and we have managed, we used to have about 200, 250 people on our client rolls, but that's in the old days when we had Fairview and we had an institutional program and you would manage more people. Currently we have about 151 veterans in conservatorship at in our program. I'd like to get that to about 180, but that's dependent upon the courts and the federal VA providing us clients. And so that's a little bit about what conservatorship does. Currently in statute, we charge a fee of up to 5%. The up to is really important. We have veterans that are indigent, who have no funds, and we don't charge them anything. And what's interesting about our program is when there's a veteran that nobody else will take because the private conservators candidly can't really afford to take an indigent veteran, they come to ODVA. I was asking Kelly earlier today, we have about 12% of our clientele that are indigent that we just care for. And that caring includes things like if they have asset management, it includes paying some bills, basically fiduciary responsibility type of things. The last time we came before you regarding this 5% fee was 1987. And so we've been doing up to 5% since 1987. And it worked out pretty well during those years because our home loan program was pretty good. And we actually had about $3.5 billion worth of assets at one point in that program. So it was pretty strong. And the department, the way it's set up, if you know anything about our budget, is the loan program supplements a lot of things in our home, in our agency. But as the program has declined, we're down to $200 million worth of assets. And where we used to have 114,000 loans, we're down to just over 2,000 loans. So the program has declined sharply. And one of the things we've looked at as an agency is how do we take all these loan subsidies that are all over our agency and reduce those? And one of the things we looked at was, should conservatorship be a little bit more self-sufficient? Should it be charging a fee that it can help it pay its way a little bit more? Currently, our loan program is paying to the conservatorship program about $40,000 a month in subsidy. It's significant. So when we looked at the conservatorship, we said, okay, how do we charge? What do we do? And we saw the 5% fee, and my first question to Kelly was, how does that relate to what the private sector charges? I was really interested in that. And in your testimony, you'll see a couple examples. We charge roughly a third. And what's interesting is the private sector charges by the hour, while we charge by percent. So it's kind of an apples and orange situation. So, you know, someone has $100,000 worth of assets. When you look at this, we charge up to 5%, and the private sector will charge however much per hour, $100 per hour, whatever it might be, $50 per hour for whatever regular service it is. So the comparisons are a little rough, but what we gave you in the testimony was a light case, about 10.7 hours, a medium case, and a real heavy case. That third example is a real life, this happened. A private conservator had the client. We ended up taking the client over, and you can see the difference in terms of charges. So when I looked at the 5% and we talked among our executive staff about, do we really want to bring a fee increase before the legislature? That is always a dicey thing to do. I've been in the process for a long time, and I wanted to give you just a sense of history. Back when I first started here in 92, fees for agencies actually were by rule. Until one agency kind of wrecked it for everybody. There was an agency that took a budget reduction and then decided to raise their fees commensurately. And you'll remember this, Representative Boone, because I think you were here. You were staffing at the time. And this agency went from charging like a $500 fee to a $5,000 fee to try to make up the cost it had lost in its budget. So the legislature got back the next session, was honestly unhappy and rightfully so, and said no more fees by rule for agencies. And so one kind of bad apple spoiled it for all the agencies that were being reasonable and doing a good job. When we came up with this bill, we decided that we would try it by rule, but clearly understanding that there's some history here about doing fees by rule. And I sent the chair a note saying, we're happy to talk about doing it in statute, but we need to charge up to half of what the private sector charges, not a third. So when we look at what that looks like, it's between the 8% and 10%, up to 8% and 10% margin. And what I mean by that up to, I want to get back to that important point. We don't charge everyone the highest mark. We look at what their assets are because we have fiduciary responsibility, which means we have to do what's in the best interest of the veteran. We have a legal binding obligation. So for a veteran that doesn't have any assets, they're still not going to get charged. For a veteran that has a moderate amount, we're going to charge the appropriate, reasonable amount that veteran can afford, but no more than that. But there are veterans, to be honest with you, that have millions of dollars in assets, and right now they could be charged a fee that would be more commensurate to what we're providing for them in terms of staffing and the work we do. I'll say one last thing. Conservatorship has gotten a lot more difficult since we've moved clients out of facilities. In the old days when somebody was in a facility, all of their cares were pretty much taken care for them in the facility, and what we did as a conservator was paid bills and kept, if they had property, made sure that it was up, kept up and all those type of things. If you came to our office today and spent a day with our conservatorship office, you would get a call from a veteran 7 times in a row because they get confused if they've called or not. Imagine someone managing your money and telling you can't have what you want, but I want to buy that Corvette. I like it. Sorry, you can't buy the Corvette. They get very angry. So we deal with a different kind of clientele than the old days, because in the old days they didn't have the kind of freedoms that they have today and the desires. And we often have to be the bad guy to say, no, that's not in your best interest to go buy a 3-bedroom house. What you really need to do is stay in your apartment because you don't have the money to do so. It's a very complicated and difficult job our folks have. And so it's very high maintenance. It's very hands-on. Our folks are some of the most caring folks, and we are dealing with the most vulnerable veterans. So we're kind of here today to have a discussion about whether the body feels that after 25 years, raising the fee is appropriate. And if so, how would we go about that so we can help move this program off our loan subsidy? With that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
I appreciate that. Thank you very much. And Representative Huffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Tom, maybe I missed it. You put out a lot of information, but how much is the department losing right now on the conservator program?
Mr. Chair, Representative Huffman, it's $40,000 a month.
Losing
$40,000. That's the subsidy, correct.
Yeah, follow-up? And conservatorship is appointed by a judge.
Mr. Chair, and Representative Hubbard, a judge or the federal VA. The federal VA can determine during its compensation period that you are not competent, so your VA monies that you would get for your disability compensation then would fall under a conservator for management.
One last.
Absolutely.
I hesitate to bring it up now because I always like to talk to people ahead of time, but I'm not going to, you know, make any accusatory statements. I'm just going to throw it out. There was a series of articles in the Oregonian a year or so ago, and a constituent of mine brought them to my attention. And in the articles, and the article did not include her father, so her father was the exact situation and the same names. And it was, I thought, a great coincidence that the same judge and the same law firm, attorney, conservatorship, and trustee, like an accounting firm or something that does trustees. Does that sound right? Conservator and trustee, maybe. Anyway, it's been a while since I read the articles, but it was interesting that the Oregonian articles brought up, and I provided them to Representative Escobar, and I think he read them too, that, again, I'm not accusing because there's a judge involved, but they're a judge, a lawyer, and it seemed like, you know, there were just a few people that tended to work on these veterans issues, and every one of them was a veteran, and ODVA was mentioned as the conservator in every one of those cases.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hoffman, I am so glad you brought that up. When that article was drafted, we met with the writer of that article in our offices and provided him significant documentation to let him know what he was about to print was not accurate. Unfortunately, that information didn't make it into the article. And so part of it's a legal issue now, which I can't really discuss because the family is moving forward with some legal pieces. It's unfortunate that ODVA wasn't able to really tell its side of the story regarding that because the articles do put the agency in a very, very ugly light. I would happily meet with anybody privately, though, and share those documents and let you know that other half of that story, because it's easy to go to the media and claim all sorts of things, but I can guarantee you through our audits and through the work that we do, and it's a legal process. You don't just fly by the seat of your pants here. There are laws and that judge that oversees, and there's approvals and those type of things. We are absolutely doing the right thing by our veterans, including in that Alfano case.
Thank you.
Thanks for bringing that up, and I appreciate you. I'm shocked to hear that the media may have not reported completely factual in that instance, but that can happen, I guess. Representative Escobar.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Tom, what I thought was interesting is that we had relatives who were alive. Why wouldn't they be in that position?
Mr. Chair, Representative Escobar, that's a great question. So if let's say that I get put under conservatorship and I have relatives, they can petition the courts and the VA to be the conservator and or the guardian. They're allowed to do that. What happens at the VA process is they send out an investigator to interview the veteran, to talk to the family, to talk to the people who want to be the conservator and or guardian. And then they make a decision. This is completely out of the agency's hands. This is something that the VA does or a court does, because the courts also have somebody that goes out and does an investigation. Sometimes they deem the family not the most appropriate placement, and there can be lots of reasons for that. Sometimes, a lot of times, it is a family member who ends up being what they call the payee or a guardian or a conservator. In the case of this one that was in the newspaper, the judge determined that the family, part of the family was not appropriate. There was a daughter involved, if you read the story, that actually was the guardian, and the judge did appoint that person. So there was one sibling in that group that was actually involved in the care, but the judge determined that the family, for whatever reason, couldn't do the conservatorship piece and chose ODVA as the conservator.
Great, thank you. Any further questions? I just noticed in your testimony, the example C given, where I think that's probably the, as you say, heavy case, 99 and a half hours, that the ODVA charged $665.27, private sector, $7,960. Those are significant differences. and the charges. And you also note in there that that raising the fee wouldn't necessarily completely eliminate the need for the loan department to subsidize the service, which is also interesting as well. Now, I'm just kind of curious, and it's probably more complicated than it would be, but I'm going to ask. You have 115 currently being served. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, 151.
I'm sorry, 151. And you're trying to get to 180. It would be the goal. If we were to have eliminated the 5% cap with the 151 that you currently have, any idea what statistically we'd be showing at in terms of the $40,000 a month subsidy? If we work that out and work that forward?
Yes, Mr. Chair. Actually, you have kind of a strange fiscal. I got called about this earlier. What they were working out, and I actually believe this was based on 7%, not 8.5%, which I have in the testimony, they say it would reduce our cost by $260,000 for the biennium. And so I'm lousy at math in my head, but you can figure out the math. It's a smaller bite. It's not going to eliminate the loan subsidy, but it does take enough of a bite out of it that it stops the bleeding a little bit. We understand that there's multiple legs to the stool to make the conservatorship program self-sufficient. So what we've talked about is raise the fee appropriately, but not extravagantly. Mm-hmm. Increase the client load, because that's part of the problem. We're light in clients right now. We need to make sure there's another bill that allow us to recover on estates for veterans who have estates, but we're not charging for. Reduce some of our internal costs, because some of the costs are high, and we're taking a look at how we're doing that. So how you bring a look at it like a business, there's two ways you make a business profitable. You raise revenue and decrease costs. And so we're kind of doing a little bit of both here. And part of the raising the revenue is the fee, but part of it also is just the number of clients we have and what flavor clients that we have.
Great. And the quick math from Ms. Edwards says we would have an additional $18,333 a month that would be subsidized. So we'd be able to cover the majority of the 40, but still have $18,003 left over. And we, you know, had possible work session on the agenda today, but we're going to hold that over till probably Tuesday. Give us a chance to kind of research a little deeper into the possible revenue statement. We have the same statement that you've been looking at. Everybody has one of $260,000. I'm told that somebody in the legislative, either the revenue office or fiscal office is watching. If they wanted to run through the door, they could.
Yeah.
But if not, we'll certainly get a hold of them. But your explanation, I think, suffices for now. Yes, Representative Escobar.
Mr. Chair, thank you. Tom, this brings to mind on what we were working on and still working on to mirror the ODBA loans with the federal BA loans, which I believe is very profitable to the Oregon Department of Veteran Affairs. The more volume they handle, the more they have as for a revenue stream, which would be beneficial not only to the ODBA, but it'd also be more beneficial to the veteran itself. Is that still holding true? I mean, even on today's anemic, I guess one would say, interest rates?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Esquivel, it is true. Last year, we made $26 million worth of loans through our program. And we're targeting $35 million, but we're still working with the Senate currently on a bill to deal with that federal VA loan guarantee, which would be another product that we could get involved with, which would expand our reach. The reality for our agency is, if you look at our revenues and you look at our loan program is very strong, but it's declining. We have portfolio runoff. We have some other issues we've talked about. We need to stabilize that, and if we don't, the agency is going to have some financial trouble in the future. So what we're trying to do is be good stewards now, so in the future that we have an agency.
Great. Yeah. We need to get that done.
And then lastly, before you leave, I noticed in testimony also the ODBA does not charge for postage and printing and travel time, computer research, those sorts of things. Is that because it's just policy not to, or are we hamstrung from doing so if you felt the need?
Mr. Chair, it's policy. You can nickel and dime a veteran quite a bit, because there's a lot of ordinary things you do during the process. If you've ever worked with an attorney, you know attorneys charge kind of by the minute. We don't really do that, but in the private sector, they will charge, since they're charging hourly, for all the different pieces they do, much like an attorney does. That's just never been the way we've run this program, because we do look at it as a benefit. We want it to make a little bit more money, because it's bleeding us to death, but we still want this to be a veteran benefit. So that's kind of how we're looking at it.
Well, and I want to be clear, I'm glad you're not nickel and diming our veterans. I just want to make sure that we weren't missing something there. Thank you very much. Any other questions of this panel? Thank you both very much. Did you have anything to add? Oh, okay. Thank you. And just like you see in the commercial, when somebody asks for their insurance agent, somebody from revenue has come down, I believe, from LRO
and fiscal.
We got them both. So if the committee would like to request anything else to come through the door, have at it and see what we can do. Thank you very much. I know how busy you both are and really appreciate you taking the time. Obviously, you know, Ms. Edwards gave you a heads up what we were doing today. So any if you can shed some light on it for us, it'd be great. Just give us your name for the record and state your...
Chair Matthews, member of the committee, Mazen Malik with Legislative Revenue Office. And
Chair, my name is Chris McDowell. I'm with Legislative Fiscal Office. I wrote the fiscal on this bill. I think we need to clarify there is no expenditure impact. Any additional requirements or workload requirements on the agency from the implementation of this bill is anticipated to be absorbed within the existing budget that they have currently, but there is a revenue impact. It's an estimation of $260,000, just a nominal revenue increase.
Okay, and Mr. Chair, if you don't mind, yes, sir.
So just to be clear, sometimes we confuse issues when you have something that is a revenue raising or the revenue impact in a fiscal, and it's not a revenue impact in the revenue impact statement. And our the way we look at this is basically if the revenue instrument comes in as revenue and it is expended somewhere else other than the regulation and administration of that particular program, then it is a revenue, and we look at it and issue a revenue impact statement. Other than that, you would have this revenue basically all expended into the administration and regulation of that program, and by that definition, it is just a cost offsetting type of revenue for us.
Well, that's very helpful. Yeah, because we were just kind of curious. We're like, okay, $260,000 is not an insignificant number, but we were just curious how that played out. Thank you. Question of the committee for any further explanation? Thank you so much for both being here, and appreciate your time, and keep up the great work. Thank you.
Thank you.
Is there anybody else that would like to provide testimony on House Bill 2044? Seeing none, we'll close the public hearing on House Bill 2044, and we'll open up public hearing on House Bill 2046. Ms. Edwards.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2046 allows the Oregon Department of Veteran Affairs to recoup costs for services from the estate of a deceased client. It permits the ODVA to retract a waiver of claim if the ODVA finds payment of the claim no longer results in a hardship and does not deplete the estate. It would also toll claims against the estate from the date the claim was waived to the date the waiver was retracted. There is no revenue impact statement, and there is a minimal fiscal impact, no statement issued.
Wonderful. And we have to testify. Hey, look who's here again. Mr. Tom Mann, please, and accompanied with Kelly Brashears. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Tom Mann with the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs. With me is Kelly Brashears, our conservatorship manager. House Bill 2046 is a little bit easier to get our hands wrapped around. Under statute ORS 115125, that's 115125, there is a methodology for the state to recover expenses they may have had from an estate. Under that piece, the Revenue Department, Child Support Division, Human Services, Oregon Health Authority, other public assistance, Department of Corrections all have a way of recovering costs for taking care of somebody who they were not able to charge due to their indigent nature but had an estate. They charge the estate after that person's passing. Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs falls under M, which is the very last thing here in the list, and this is a hierarchical list, so the first person in the order is the spouse and children, which is the right way to do this, and it goes down who gets to collect when. Under House Bill 2046, we add the conservatorship recovery into the list. And the reason is this. We have some of our clients that have significant assets that don't have any liquid assets. And so we don't charge them for any of the services we provide, but they have hundreds of thousands of dollars upon their passing. And currently what happens with that money for a veteran, if it's not recovered by somebody, goes to state lands and then it's put into the mix, wherever it goes into the great oblivion. I think it goes to the common school fund. I shouldn't say that, but I think it does. We think that we should be able to get back our expenses. And those expenses really are not very much. We're talking maybe $20,000 a year of what we are doing for free for veterans. So $40,000 a biennium if that would happen. And really, a lot of it's for our DOJ costs. When we're dealing with veterans, there tends to be, especially when one passes, there tends to be a lot of DOJ costs, attorney fees. And so we think this is a simple little bill, one more leg of the stool to help us financially do what we think is the right thing. I would say that with both these bills, we're not asking to do something other agencies haven't been doing for decades. We're just late to the party and asking that we be allowed to do what's reasonable as well. And I would say, too, again, this is a benefit program. We don't look at this as a business or a money-making entity. This is something that we do for the benefit of veterans. And we feel very strongly, both in our rules and as the managers of this program, there is no way that we're gouging veterans or doing any of that kind of stuff. That's just not what this program's about. It's not even about being completely self-sufficient, as you can see. We're kind of trying to do what we can. But if some veteran has a couple hundred thousand dollars of assets and they've incurred $10,000 worth of costs with us, we think that that's reasonable that we should be able to recover those costs from the estate when appropriate.
Thank you. Committee members, any questions? So in adding ODVA to ORS 115-125, you mentioned kind of a hierarchy. Where's the prioritization of reimbursements in that list? How's that outlined in the ORS? And forgive me for not knowing right away.
In the, Mr. Chairman, in the bill, House Bill 2046, we become number I.
Thank you.
So right after child support, which would be number H, or letter H, excuse me, it says the claim of the Department of Veterans Affairs under 406-100, which is our program. So what you would pay first, and I think this is important, who gets paid first, obviously the spouse and the children, expenses of administration, expenses of a plain and decent funeral and disposition, debts and taxes with preference to federal law, reasonable and necessary medical and hospital expenses of the last illness, taxes with preference under the law of this state, debts owed employees of the descendant for labor performed within 90 days, child support arrearages, child support, and then they put us, and then they put the claim of the Department of Human Services and Oregon Health Authority and Medicaid. It was interesting when they did the bill that they put us before Medicaid. So we didn't really ask where they would put us. The LC just did that. I think they put us there because what we ask for is so small compared to the Medicaid reimbursement piece, because the Medicaid reimbursement piece can be so large that it can eat the entire estate. So I think when LC wrote this, they were thinking, let's get veterans their little piece before Medicaid reimbursement eats the whole thing. I'm actually really open to, if the committee feels that there should be a different hierarchy, that we could talk about what you think that should be.
I appreciate that, and thanks for putting that on the record, because I do think the child support end of it, that's an important piece. I think labor, you know, if you have some laborers that have worked and they're due their pay as well. I don't necessarily have a concern about the hierarchy and where that fits. Interesting point about the prescription meds, though, and how that plays into the authority there. Any questions of the committee? Yes, Representative Broom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You kind of took my thunder, but that's okay, because I was going to say it would be nice to, if you have the choice to put child support before the taxes, at the risk of the
Mr. Chair, Representative Broom, the beautiful thing about a piece of legislation with the right relating clause is you can amend it the way you like.
We've seen that before. Yeah. Thank you for that. Any further questions of this panel? Seeing none, thank you very much. Appreciate you being here today. Thank you. Anybody in the audience wish to testify on House Bill 2046? 2046. I will close the public hearing on House Bill 2046. And if you don't mind, I'm going to stand at these for just about 2 minutes. And we are back, and I appreciate that. We will open a work session, and I think our intent will be to open work sessions on, excuse me, both bills that we've heard today. Open a work session on House Bill 2044.
Chair Matthews, I move House Bill 2044 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Parrish moves House Bill 2044 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion on the motion? No discussion. I will only say that my initial reservation for moving this today in such a swift manner was more to do with how we got to a $260,000 statement. I wanted to make sure that we were good on that, and I appreciate that that the committee is willing to be a little flexible and move this along, because I really support the effort. So with that, any further discussion?
So we're positive it's a $260,000 statement. Do we need to revisit this on the Senate side on the money, because of course fiscals being what they are, sometimes they revenue statements being what they are, sometimes they're not?
I think the agency will be carrying that over to the Senate on our behalf and following up on that, but yeah, I think we'll be all right. Any further discussion? No further discussion. If you'll please call the roll. Thanks, Mike.
Representative Wilson.
Aye.
Representative Esquivel.
Aye.
Representative Huffman.
Aye.
Representative Witt.
Aye.
Vice Chair Fagan.
She's excused.
Vice Chair Parrish.
Aye.
Chair
Matthews. Aye. And House Bill 2044 passes. And we'll need a carrier for the bill. Anybody want to volunteer to carry House Bill 2044?
I have a question. Representative Witt and I have a question. If we have a $260,000 revenue more, wouldn't that have to go to Ways and Means for them to balance that into a budget?
We are back on the issue of forward that over.
Or would it go to revenue?
Revenue committee, I
think the explanation from the agency was that from fiscal or revenue was that it comes back in to the program itself. The program is currently being subsidized by the $40,000. We have our director forward. Let's find out.
Members of the committee, for the record, my name is Cameron Smith, director nominee of the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs. My understanding from the testimony was that when it's within fee-based and within the program, that it wouldn't necessarily have the subsequent referral, but that if that money was being spent by the conservatorship or by the agency outside of, so generating revenue then for other program areas, then it would be classified for that subsequent as revenue for subsequent referral.
And I appreciate that. That's how I heard it and understood it, because we're still going to have a subsidy of about $18,003 from the program into the conservatorship. Right. So thank you for that. I appreciate that. So with that, do we have a carrier?
And I wasn't volunteering to carry, but I was just going to say.
You did. I saw you.
No, I don't. but I didn't hear that they're raising, FTE or that there's new people involved. I mean, it's just,
Yeah, it's simply the opportunity to... seek reimbursement at a rate that can at least help offset some of the subsidy that we're currently getting now out of the program, so putting us in line. So, and again, have not done that since 1987, I believe, so good for us. Any carriers wish to carry the bill? Seeing none, you can't ask any more than that. I'll carry it. 2044, thank you. Appreciate it. Let's go on. We will open up a work session on House Bill 2046.
Chair Matthews, I move House Bill 2046 to the floor with a do pass recommendation.
Thank you. Representative Parrish moves House Bill 2046 to the floor with a do pass recommendation. Further discussion on the motion? Any further discussion on the motion? Seeing none. Mike, could you call the roll, please?
Representative Boone?
Aye.
Representative Escobel?
Aye.
Representative Huffman?
Aye.
Representative Witt?
Aye.
Vice Chair Fagan?
Excused.
Vice Chair Parrish?
Aye.
Chair Matthews?
Aye. And the motion carries. So we passed House Bill 2046.
I'll
is there a carry up to the bill? Wow, look at everybody now. Well, y'all just signed 2 years and we active duty military.
It's either that, Mr. Chair, or pitch in and buy you a clientele.
Oh, no clientele here. Representative Parrish.
I'll do it.
Thank you.
Brutal.
Thank
brutal.
You. I'll carry any fee bill for our veterans.
That's right.
And with that, does anybody have anything good of the order? Yes, Representative
Parrish. I do. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to give everybody a heads up. On March 14th, this will be a double committee, and we're going to be rolling out what was the culmination of House Resolution 3, the resilience plan, and we'll have members of the OSPAC team who developed the plan, and hopefully some of our private partners too. We had 150 people involved in working over a year on this plan, and so please be welcome coming to this meeting. Thanks.
Wonderful. Anybody else for the good of the order? None. Have a great day. Thank you very much, and committee's adjourned.